Richard Sennett teaches sociology at New York University and the London School of Economics. He's written over a dozen books of social science, as well as three novels. His latest volume, The Craftsman, names a basic human impulse, the desire to do a job well for its own sake. Although the word craftsman may suggest a way of life that disappeared with the rise of industrial society, Sennett argues that craft means far more than skilled manual labor. In fact, he told Steve Paulson, it suggests ways of using tools, organizing work, and thinking about materials that remain viable ideas for how to conduct your life.
We often learn what something is about, even in the most abstract way, by practical, concrete activity with it. That was obvious, you know, in the age when artisan craftsmen produced most of the things we had. They didn't have many machines. They had to think about what they were doing constantly. The hand and the head were joined together. You couldn't easily separate them. People think that now that's no longer the case, that those artisanal crafts have disappeared, that people can do things abstractly without reference to, you know, concrete practices, to actually getting into the guts of something, hands-on knowledge, and so on. And the point of my book is to challenge all that. The connection between hands-on learning and thinking is very important. And it's important for people who do service work to think about, you know, every concrete instance of what they do rather than simply follow procedures. So my argument is that if we expand a little the definition of craftsmanship to think about it as doing the job well, getting skill, and wanting to do the job well for its own sake, that this is not a phenomenon that's gone away, nor is its essential connection, which is between doing hands-on work and understanding what you're doing.
Hmm. So this could apply to a doctor or a cello player, I suppose a computer programmer, as well as sort of the traditional kinds of craftspeople, you know, quilters, stonemasons, woodworkers.
Absolutely. And historically, this division between art and craft came about for a kind of social reason, that in the Renaissance, people began to think that art concerned expressing something inside individuals.
Mm-hmm. Originality.
Whereas, yes, exactly. Whereas craft was a set of shared practices. But if you look at actual Renaissance artists like Cellini, for instance, he was a sculptor and he was a goldsmith. Many painters worked in ateliers long before, you know, they stood out as individuals. It's a very ambiguous line, and I'm uneasy about it, Steve, because I feel that emphasizing the difference between art and craft in a way sort of impoverishes the actual expression we can make. It focuses too much on our motives and not what we actually accomplish or achieve.
Hmm. I mean, that's interesting because I think sort of the conventional wisdom would say that people who make violins would be craftsmen, but Stradivari was an artist because he elevated it to a new level. But you're not willing to make that kind of distinction.
The reason I'm unhappy about it is that it leads us to think that sort of the mass of people, you know, can do crafts, but only the exceptional person can stand out as an artist or as a scientist. Many people, many, many people have the capacity to do good work and to take pride in doing a good job. We're very elitist, particularly in the U.S., I think, about this. You know, we assume that the better it is, the fewer the people who can do it. If you hold everybody to the Stradivarius standard and say if it's not a Stradivarius, it's worthless, you're really doing something that's, I think, quite destructive. The equivalent of that, what we tend to do in modern society. You know, we're only looking for the few people who stand out rather than developing the capacities of most people. And I think most people have the capacity to be motivated and to realize doing a good job.
And this goes back to your definition of craftsmanship, which is the desire to do a job well for its own sake.
Right. And sort of the lower down the class hierarchy you go, the more important that is, because, you know, many working class people aren't getting much recognition. I did interviews with hospital orderlies, hospital workers, sort of at the bottom of the medical pole. And those people, you know, cared about their patients, they cared about keeping them clean, keeping their rooms clean, and so on, even though it rarely meant anything for their paycheck, and they weren't going to go anywhere in their jobs. That's craftsmanship.
Mm-hmm. Now, historically, craftsmanship also often involved a long learning period. I mean, there was the whole notion of the apprentice, and wasn't it often years, maybe even decades, before you stopped being an apprentice, before you became a, quote, master craftsman?
Yeah, 7 years. To move from being an apprentice to a journeyman, and then another 3 or 4 to being a master. There's an interesting statistic about this. There's something called the 10,000-hour rule, and it's a rough rule of thumb about how long it takes to become so skilled in doing a complicated task that you can do it confidently without having to think too much or doubt too much what you're doing. But this 10,000-hour rule seems to apply to people learning to be proficient in sports, learning how to be good, you know, well-skilled as musicians, how long it takes to, if you're a surgeon, to be really comfortable doing surgery. And the reason for it is that it's an estimate of the time that it takes not to do something right as a one-off, but to know through continual practice and through looking at what you're doing, being self-critical about what you're doing, to have the confidence to know that you can do it again and again and again. One of the problems in our schools is that, you know, multiple choice tests and the fear of boring kids means that oftentimes we deprive people of that 10,000-hour rule span of experience. You know, the moment they can do one thing well, they're pushed on to do the next. And it's not a good way to learn. Something similar happens in a lot of forms of flexibilized work. Think about business consultants, for instance, who flit from place to place, task to task, job to job. They're kind of Renaissance men light or Renaissance women light. Really knowing something isn't ingrained in that kind of work. And, you know, our economy is increasingly privileges Renaissance light as a way of being flexible in the job force. What I'm arguing in the book is that that kind of superficial competence is not real craftsmanship. It's not real engagement. It's not depth.
Do you see a morality to craftsmanship? I mean, other than just trying to do good work? I mean, are you partly talking about what it means to live well?
I pondered a lot the case of Robert Oppenheimer, you know, one of the leaders in the invention of the atomic bomb. Mm-hmm. When Oppenheimer was out at Los Alamos, in the process of, you know, fabricating the bomb and getting it to work, somebody asked him about the ethics of making this weapon that would destroy hundreds of thousands of people. And at that moment, he responded, well, when you see a technical problem that's sweet, you just get on with it and you worry about the ethical consequences later. When Oppenheimer went out to the test site, and the first bomb went off, and, you know, they'd never seen light or glare like this. He remarked in his diary that evening, I've become the god of death. And he was appalled at what he had done. And that's an ethical problem, that often the issue of getting something to work clouds our judgment about whether it's going to be destructive or constructive for other people. It's impossible for the craftsman to really know easily, as an individual, in advance, whether something he or she is working on is going to harm other people. I've heard many technicians talk about this. It's not our problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think about scientists in particular who are working on something new, often, you know, a new kind of discovery or technology, and who knows what's going to become of it later.
Right. I thought a lot about this, about the need to invent, you know, new kinds of tools and procedures for dealing with energy and ecological issues. They may turn out to be destructive, the way biofuels are turning out to be something more destructive than we thought about. You know, we're not done with this tension at all.
Richard Sennett calls his latest book The Craftsman. He talked about it with Steve Paulson.